Unfortunately, this issue comes up often. I've had to deal with it many times in marriages where a woman finds out that her husband was watching pornography. And while he may deal with it and he certainly does whatever he should to rid himself of that problem, it then creates a wedge in the marriage. And oftentimes a woman will come to me and say, Rabbi, how can I forgive him? How can I get past this? And I believe that that is the very first and integral, I'd say vital, ingredient in solving this problem. You see, if a woman has the attitude of, I just can't get past it, it bothers me emotionally, I wish it didn't, but it does, then we're in a good position. Why? Because then, like much in life, you deal with things, you go past it. The real trouble comes in when people get the attitude of, listen, this is unacceptable, I will not hear of anything. And even sometimes it gets to a point of revenge or looking for justice. And then, I'm sorry to tell you, your marriage will suffer maybe even irreparable damage. I've been involved in many, many situations where a husband was involved in these kind of things. And they get past it and they have a beautiful marriage. And I've also been involved, I'm sorry to say, in situations that didn't turn out anywhere near as pretty. And a lot of it had to do with people's attitudes. Now, I'm not here to tell you or to tell anyone how to A, run your life or even what's improper. In other words, we're dealing with something that clearly both your husband as well as you recognize as wrong. And we're not dealing with the moral police, and we're not dealing with whether this should happen or shouldn't happen. That's a whole different discussion. What we're dealing with here is the emotional hurt and the potential damage that it could do to a relationship. And more than anything, okay, how do I get past it? How do I deal with it? How do I bring back a real, vibrant, loving marriage? So I believe that the first step, more than anything, is after you accept the fact that you're looking to deal with the problem, is to actually identify what is it that's bothering you. A lot of times, you know, we have feelings and they're very powerful, they're very passionate, but a lot of times we don't really do the difficult work of identifying exactly what we're feeling. And I think the first step in terms of solving this is to ask yourself that key critical question. It hurts because what? Meaning to say, you may feel very strongly about it. I feel like he stabbed me in the heart. I got that. But what is it exactly about what he did that really bothers you? You see, only once you really identify this can you begin understanding, can you begin dealing with it, can you potentially move on from it. And there will be many reasons why a wife will feel exactly that. One woman will say, he betrayed my trust to another woman. It's that he chose another woman over me. And to another woman, how could he violate his marriage? It's a commitment. How could he just threw me away? Or he clearly doesn't love me. Or how could I respect him? He's a hypocrite. But it's very, very important that you identify exactly what the point that's troubling you is. Because once you do, then we can start sort of dealing with it in a very real sense. But regardless, I'd like to present to you a perspective. Again, I'm not here to tell you or to tell anyone how to feel, but I am here to offer a perspective on this issue, which if it resonates and if it really sits well with you, might potentially allow you to, again, deal with this issue, get past it, and continue and maybe even build a stronger, better marriage. And to share with you that perspective, let me start with the following observation. There are many women today who dress in a manner that I consider absolutely natznias. They could be very chashuv women, very important women, very prominent, and they dress in a manner, you'll excuse my saying it, is abhorrent. Now, they may meet all the guidelines, you know, in terms of a slight length of sleeves and whatnot, but the way the clothing fits, the way they look in it, just isn't proper. I'm not from a different world. I didn't grow up 100 years ago, But I have to share with you the mode of dress today is radically different than it was 20 years ago, and surely vastly different than it was 30 or 40 years ago. And there are many, many young women who have very, very good ashkafas, very frum, very solid women, and they dress in a manner that, wow. And just to reassure myself that it wasn't me, every time my wife sees someone like this, she says, that's disgusting. And I hate to say it that way, but it's true. So here's the question. How do you explain a fine Beishakov girl, educated, very religious, dressing in a manner that's completely out of bounds? Okay, again, within the confines of the exact length of skirt, the exact length of exact sleeve length, but in terms of whether it's modest, whether it's appropriate, whether it's fine, way, way out of bounds. How do you explain it? How do you explain even Beishakov teachers sometimes who dress in a way that really isn't appropriate? And I'd like to share with you the answer to that question. The answer is, it's a major nisayon. To a woman, looking pretty is a big deal. But it's not just something that's topical. It's not just something that's sort of like outside. Within the essence of a woman is a need to be seen as attractive. And while it's not a big deal often to guys, it's a major, major nisayon to women. And I'd like to share with you one simple observation. There are many yeshivas that don't have mirrors in the dorm. As a matter of fact, there's some yeshivas that have a rule. I went to Chavetz Chaim yeshiva there. The yeshiva was very makbid on Galus Adam. Mirrors were part of, yet in the bathroom, etc. But there are many yeshivas where they will not have mirrors in the dorm. Guys shouldn't be that vain. And I'm okay. Yeah, mirrors, no mirrors, I'm fine with it. If you find me a seminary or a Beishakov dorm that doesn't allow mirrors on the wall, grab your daughter and get her out of there fast as anything. Why? Because for a guy, it's not that important. And it's okay, and maybe even good for him not to focus on that. But if you're bringing up a young woman to fight her nature and to be against the very fabric of her essence, you're damaging her. It's not just that you won't be successful, you're going to have the exact opposite effect, because it is very much within the nature of a woman to need to feel attractive and to need to feel pretty. Okay, now I want you to imagine we have a couple who are married, and they're married, let's say, 5, 6, we'll make it 10 years, and the husband says one day to his wife, this is unacceptable. You're dressing that way. I will not tolerate this. I will not allow you out of the house again. I want either you're dressing as I say you should, or we're done. What would you say to such a man? Besides how clever, or rather unclever, he is in his approach, I would make one very simple observation. I would say to him, fellow, I hear that you feel your wife should dress differently. I get it. But you don't have the right to make light of what is to her a major nisayon, a major test. Yes, it's very easy for you to wear baggy suits. Yes, it's very easy for you to dress like a schlump because it doesn't bother you. But you have no right to use your emotional system to gauge your wife. And you have no right to say, well, I don't dress that way and I won't accept my wife dressing that way. Not only have you acted outside the realm of a married person, outside the realm of marriage, what you've done is you've judged her based on your emotionality, based on your perspective, and it's completely unfair. And I believe that this is a major, major foundational principle in marriage. Men and women are different, fundamentally different. Different in their outlook, different in their thinking, different in their perspective, different in their temperament, different in so many basic, fundamental ways. And everyone gets that until they get married, and they assume, well, my spouse is just like me. And they use their system of judgment to paskin, to judge their spouse. And guess what? It's radically unfair. It's unfair because it just doesn't apply to the other person. Besides that, it's not your job to judge your spouse. It's not your job to change your spouse. Besides that fact, it's unfair. Okay. With that as a background, my kids woke me up one evening. Mrs. So-and-so's at the door. Mrs. So-and-so's at the door. Clearly, it was late at night, and I went to the door, and there was Mrs. So-and-so. Why was Mrs. So-and-so at the door of my house so late at night? Because she just found out that her husband was having an affair. Okay. Now, I knew the couple very well. I knew both of them very well. And I'd like to share with you something very, very profound. That man was happily married. Yep. He loved his wife. Again, I had many, many conversations with both of them. I was very close to both of them. And I knew the ins and outs. He loved his wife, was happily married, and yet was having an affair. Now, here's the question. Are you talking? Does that make sense? Is it possible? If a guy's happily married, how's it possible they would have an affair? And even more than that, would you like to know something very compelling? The woman that he was having an affair with was not that attractive, and his wife was far more attractive. Now, when I say this to any woman, they say it completely doesn't make sense. It's obvious he wasn't happily married. He didn't love his wife. He didn't find her attractive. As a matter of fact, the first thing that a woman says when she finds out that her husband was, excuse my expression, cheating on her, that he doesn't think I'm pretty. She's prettier than me. And this is the first critical understanding that you have to come to. Men and women are different. A man could be happily married, love his wife, think that his wife is very, very attractive, and he still has to do an awful lot of work not to be looking. He still has to be very vigilant and very conscious not to be looking at things. And any woman who, you know, wants to wants to take a husband out to the movies, you know, come on, let's just go or watch a video. You know, come on, it's just a Motzei Shabbos. Come on, what's the big deal? She does not understand that when that actress comes up on that huge, huge projector or the monitor, and she's drop-dead gorgeous, she does not understand what her husband is thinking. And I guarantee, as the scene plays out and the violins start playing and all the romantic music, I guarantee that he is not chazering the Daf HaYomi. But women don't think of it in those terms. But men do. And this is obvious to any man. And if you tell over the story about a guy having an affair, even though he was happily married, and even though he found his wife attractive, most guys would immediately recognize it as, yeah, I get it. And most women don't. And this is the key point. You see, men and women function differently. And because they function differently, there are different operating rules and different things that they need and different ways of dealing with them. Let me give you what I consider a classic example. The Shmuz used to be much more of a sort of in-presence organization, Tiferes Mei Torah. We used to run Shabbatons and Malav Malkas, different things. So we were running a certain Shabbaton, and I was meeting with a number of the women who were kind of the organizing committee, and we were planning out some of the logistics of that coming Shabbaton. It was in a hotel, and there was a pool in the middle of the hotel, and a number of the rooms kind of surrounded that pool. And one of the issues we had to deal with was which couples could we put in the rooms to make sure that they wouldn't look into the pool, meaning it was a full glass, each room had a full glass floor-to-ceiling front to it. They were blinds, but we had to make sure we had the, you know, trustworthy, you know, people in the room so it would be appropriate and proper. So one woman says, listen, put me and my husband, you know, in those rooms. My husband you could trust. Her husband was the last guy in the world I would ever trust. But I want to share with you exactly what was going on here. She was a loyal woman, happily married. He was a loyal husband, happily married. But therein lies the difference. generally speaking, if a woman was brought up properly and she's happily married, she doesn't have eyes for other men, and even if she finds another man attractive, she's not really pulled. But that's not a man. A man can be happily married, love his wife, and still be very, very much pulled to look at other women. And the reason is because, I don't have any way to say it other than to say it as clearly as I can, women and men typically relate to physical relations, relate to intimacy differently. Now, not everything I'm going to say applies to all men and all women, because again, people are people and there are vast differences. But generally speaking, most men, when they get married, they're happily married and they don't have a huge need for a relationship. They don't have a huge need to bond, to connect. Most women have a very, very powerful need to feel a connection and a bond to their husband. I cannot tell you how many times I'll have a couple come in, and first I'll ask the man, so tell me, how's your marriage? Good, Baruch Hashem, things good, you're good. Then I'll ask the woman, so tell me, how's your marriage? Horrible, it's terrible, it's terrible. Folks, are you guys married, like, to each other? But how is it? How could it be he's happily married and she's so miserable? So the answer oftentimes is that when a guy gets married, certainly in the beginning stages, he's very happy to have a roommate who he, you know, also has some benefits with. But it's, you know, it's fine, it's good. The need for the bonding, the connection, the emotional attachment, typically by guys isn't there. And typically by women is very, very much there. Girls rate themselves by how many friends and how many best friends and their close attachment. I remember watching one of my daughters when she was 12 years old sitting on the couch with another friend, having this intimate conversation, having this bonding. I was like, I've never, ever seen two guys having that kind of conversation. Women typically need the, crave the attachment. Hashem created women differently than men. Women are the nurturer, the caregiver. Typically, they are the ones who are toveya, who demand the relationship, who foster the relationship. And oftentimes, that surfaces in a very interesting dynamic in the marriage. One of the tools that Hashem gave to keep a couple bonded and to allow them to increase their love, their attachment, is physical intimacy. But it functions differently in a man than it does in a woman. Typically, for a man, it starts with a desire for physical intimacy. He desires having sex. That's what he has a need. Now, when he does that, it brings a bonding. It brings a connection. The way Hashem created that act, the physical act, creates a very powerful bond between a couple. If you haven't had a chance, you listen to the marriage seminar, part number 7, Tools That Bond. I spent a lot of time describing exactly how this functions. But that reality often starts with a man has a desire, and then when he's with his wife, it builds the love, it builds the attachment. With a woman, it's oftentimes, if not usually, the opposite. She'll be in a situation where if she feels that she loves her husband, she'll want to be with him. But if she doesn't feel connected, if she doesn't feel bonded, she doesn't want to get into bed. She's not interested in that. And again, it's not always, and it's not a rule, but b'derech klal, most of the time, that's the reality. There's an expression in the street, excuse me for saying it, but I believe it defines very clearly. Men give affection for sex, meaning they'll give their wife attention because they desire physical intimacy, and then that's what they're doing. Women will give sex for love, meaning to say they'll be with their husband because they want the love. Regardless, no matter how you slice it, the physical act brings a couple together. It creates a bond. And I believe if women had a clue to how important it is to a marriage for them to be with their husband, they would demand much more physical involvement. You see, for a man, typically, it's not so easy for him to bond to his wife. The physical act of intimacy helps, and it's a huge tool in the process. And it's something to use exactly for that purpose as a tool. But the start point is the key. For most guys, The starting point is pure desire. He has a need. He has a hunger. And oftentimes, that hunger has nothing to do with love, nothing to do with that person. And as much as that's hard for a woman to hear, because if I don't love him, who would want to be with him? Ugh, ew. To a man, I'm sorry to tell you, it's probably not the reality. And for a guy, typically, being with a woman can have nothing to do with who she is. Now, don't get me wrong. That's not the end goal. The end goal is for a man to train himself and to grow and to learn to attach himself to his wife and bond and then desire her because she is his wife. But certainly in the beginning stages and certainly in the wild world that we live in, it is pretty typical for a guy to just have a desire, a hunger, an appetite, a need, and it has little to do with the person. Now, again, I'm going to repeat myself because it's imperative that you get this. It is a huge, huge aid to a successful marriage. I don't care why a guy wants to be with his wife. It can't help but cause an attachment, a bond, building the love, and it's something that's a vital ingredient in a successful marriage. My point only is that why he will get into bed may have nothing to do with the person that he's getting into bed with. And you see, that's the big point that women can't seem to get. When a man looks at another woman, it's not because he's choosing her over you. If he goes to a pornography site, it's not because he doesn't find you attractive, not because he wants a different wife. He has a desire, he has an appetite, and he has a hunger. Now, he's got to work on it. And I'm not here to condone this behavior. And I'm not here to tell you, yeah, it's okay. It's good. It's just, it's normal. It's a, you know, fine. It's not at all. And it's a huge part of a person's avodas Hashem. But you have to recognize what it is. It's a nisayon that you don't have. It's a test that you're not exposed to. It's something that you can't relate to because in your world, in your emotionality, it's not there. And I'm afraid to tell you that it becomes very, very difficult because if you're going to judge your husband based on your world, you're never going to understand him and it's going to be very difficult for you to forgive him. You see, what happens oftentimes is that a woman just can't get, I just can't accept it. I can't accept he did this. I don't want anything to do with him. And again, it is a difficult situation to deal with. I want to share with you one more concept that's sort of like along this approach that may help a little bit. When my wife had her first child, she went on the SIT diet. Many women go on this diet. I'm not sure you're aware of it, but the SIT diet is basically you take a wedge of chocolate cake in this hand, you take a Diet Coke in this hand, you say the words, I'm so fat, I'm so fat, I'm so fat. You consume the entire wedge of chocolate cake, drink the Diet Coke. And that's the self-inflicted torture diet, the SIT diet. Now, my wife is one of the sharpest people I know. And after our first child, she had put on some weight. And I saw her on the SIT diet, doing the whole thing. And I said to her, listen, dear, if you decide to be heavy, I'm okay with that. If you decide to be thin, I'm okay with that. But the self-inflicted torture stuff, it's just not doing us any good. Anyway, as they say, if it's going to help in. So I said to my wife, fine, okay. This is the story. We're going to Weight Watchers. I'm going to take you. Now, this was quite a number of years ago. I was in Colo, and I had a break during the day, midday. And I said, we're going to go to I think it was a 12:30 or 1:30 meeting. We're going to go there every Tuesday. And I took my wife. Now, again, this was quite a number of years ago, and I believe that I was the only male in the room. And I got to experience something very, very eye-opening. Everyone was sitting around, and the leader got up and said, okay, ladies, tell me, what was your week like? And one woman raised her hand and said, oh, my week was going great until someone brought chocolate cake to work. Oh, chocolate cake! I hear some of the other women moan. Another woman said, I was doing great, and then my kids brought home a huge bag of potato chips. Oh, potato chips! I hear other ladies groan. And I got to watch this group of mature women losing it right before my eyes. Now, I'd like to ask you a fundamental question. What is so difficult about losing weight? Weight Watchers is a bona fide diet. They give you a very clearly laid out nutritional plan. No one starves. They give you 3 full meals a day plus snacks. And in fact, most people when they're on Weight Watchers enjoy their food to a greater extent. No one goes hungry. So what's the big deal? Go on a diet and stick to it. And the answer to that question is change is very difficult. Because when that chocolate cake comes in front of you, there is a firm voice in your head that says, no, I made up. I'm not touching a wedge of chocolate cake for the next 2 months. But there's another voice that says, yum, no, yum, no, yum, yum, ah. And you could watch a human being disintegrate. And the only reason I share this with you is because that is the human being. And no one would say to a woman who's overweight, well, why don't you just lose the weight? Why don't you just stop it? Just stick to the diet and cut it out. Because anyone with das, with understanding, recognizes that it's a bitter, bitter battle. Well, why don't you just say no? Just say no is very fine, very well, but it's not so easy. And as this is an issue, and by the way, if you're younger still, wait till you hit 40. I guarantee, even if you're able to keep the weight off right now, when you hit 40, I guarantee it's going to be a different world. And suddenly you're going to have a lot less, oh my goodness, what happened? What changed? And when you confront the reality, you recognize that we human beings have strengths, have weaknesses, and there are various tests. Now, as an aside, and a very interesting aside, I have no problem with Weight Watchers. I went with my wife 3 times now over the 30 years that we're married, and each time I hit goal. The diet, get on a diet, do it, boom, what's the big deal? You know why? Because for me, it's not that hard. For me, that's not my test. That's not my weakness, and it isn't a big deal. But it sure would be rude, callous, and obnoxious for me to judge my wife based on my emotionality. What are you eating guns? You shop us another piece of cake for? What are you taking another slice of challah? What's wrong with you? We have a diet. We have a commitment. Why are you doing that? If I were to do that, forget the callousness, forget the obnoxiousness. What I'd be doing is unfair because I would be judging her based on my emotionality. And if I could share with you one simple point, it's this. You don't have the nisayon that your husband has. You don't have the fight. And you can't relate to it in an emotional sense. It's not your world and it's not your battle. But you have your own things. I don't care who you are, I guarantee. I guarantee that if you were to look in the mirror, you'd find that you got your quirks, you have your idiosyncrasies, you got your problems, you have your issues. And if you are honest, you'd be able to say these words because I think they're so true. The words are looking in the mirror, saying the words, I am a difficult person to live with. And folks, this is true about every one of us. Every one of us has shtick and things and strengths and weaknesses. And if a person is not able to look in the mirror and say the words, I am a difficult person to live with, they're living in a state of delusion. But me? I'm not a state of delusion. I'm not difficult to live with. In the dorm, I had so many friends, and everybody was my buddies, and I had no problem. I was a popular guy. What do you mean? Yeah, very nice. At a distance, from afar. But every human being has their own things, their own shtick, and every human being is difficult to live with. And that's a reality. And as your husband has flaws, guess what? You have them also. Now, this is not about picking people apart. This is much more about perceiving the world from your husband's vantage point. I don't know of a guy who says, wow, pornography is great. Let me go on a porn site so I could be filled with lust and desire. Let's go. This is fun. Wow. It's a bitter battle and it's a fight. And oftentimes, if he does those kind of things, there's such a sense of guilt and shame and embarrassment. And any time a woman says, but how could he do it to me? I think she should ask a much more profound question. How could he do it to him? He doesn't love me. If he loved me, he would never do that. One second. Doesn't he love him? He doesn't want to do that. He wishes he never was involved. He wishes he never saw this stuff. So why is he doing it? The answer is because he's a human being like you and I, with strengths and weaknesses. And guess what? This is his challenge. This is his battle. This is his fight. His job is to fight the fight. His job is to battle and get stronger and eventually break free. But you have to recognize that what he's going through is Gehenna. And he's not happy with it. And he hasn't rejected you. And he's not choosing another woman over you. It has nothing to do with you. It has completely nothing to do with you. I can't make this clear enough. He doesn't love these women he's looking at. He doesn't want to write to them and speak to them and be with them. It's a passion, desire, and appetite that has nothing to do with the person. It's pure taiva, desire, lust, hunger. And the reason why it's so difficult for you to deal with is because that's not your world. And you sure wouldn't do that. So why would my husband do something like that? And the answer is because you and he are different. And the reason he does it has nothing to do with you, not because he doesn't love you, not because he doesn't care, and by the way, not even because he's not so frum. Again, let's go back to the women who dress in a manner that really isn't appropriate. And I'd like to share with you, I know many women who are very, very frum, very, very scrupulous, very religious, and they dress in a manner that really is, excuse my saying it, disgusting. How could it be? How could it be? How could it be? Because guess what? They're showing to the whole world. Don't they have any sense of dignity, sense of self? What can I tell you? It's a rough generation. There are a lot of nisyonos. And the point is, as it would be wrong, cruel, callous, and unfair for a husband to judge his wife based on his emotionality, it's the same for a woman to judge her husband based on her emotional realm, on her reality, on what she experiences. And understanding this and really dealing with it takes a long time. You see, what I'm offering you is an intellectual perspective. I believe it's correct. Again, I'm not here to tell you that watching pornography or anything of that ilk is okay. And I'm not here to tell you it's fine, not at all. It's clearly wrong, it's usur, it's forbidden, and a guy has to fight that fight, get away from it. I get it, 100% true. But this discussion here has nothing to do with that. This discussion is how do you deal with your husband now that you found out, now that you're aware. And what I'm presenting, I believe, is the correct intellectual perspective. The problem, though, is that you have emotions. And even if you'll think about this, dwell on it, really hear it really, really well, yeah, but still, I feel cheated. I feel like he stabbed me in the heart. I feel like he slapped me in the face. I feel like he threw me in the gut. How could he do that to me? And what can I tell you? It is a difficult thing to deal with. Your husband isn't happy with it. You're surely not happy with it. Believe me, he wishes like anything. He never was involved in this stuff, as you do. And it's one of those issues of life that you have to learn to deal with. And oftentimes, it requires outside intervention. Sometimes marriage counselors, sometimes therapy, to deal with it. Again, intellectually, I don't think it should be that difficult. Intellectually, it's just a matter of understanding that he has a different operating realm than you do. But again, emotionally, it's not that simple. But I think the work, the avoda on your part, is exactly in this realm, to recognize that this had nothing to do with you. He didn't betray your trust. He didn't choose another woman over you. He didn't throw you away. It had nothing to do with you. It wasn't you or her. It was desire, appetite, hunger. He got pulled into something and he wishes he didn't. He got pulled into something that destroys the essence of him. And he is a human being as you are, as we all are. And coming to recognize that is one of the basics, I think, that are key and essential to understanding. And I have a mushal, I think, that might be helpful. A lot of times women get all bent out of shape. He's a hypocrite. He acts like he's so frum, and he learns, and he davens, and he does this. I can't respect a guy like that ever again. Okay, Let's say that's your emotional realm. And let's say that's your reaction. Okay, how do you deal with it? Now, again, if you decide marriage is over, you decide you want out, that is your choice. I personally believe it's a very unwise choice. I personally believe you'll be throwing away potentially your marriage, your future, the happiness of yourself, your kids, and the misery that you'll suffer is untold and unimaginable, but it is your choice. If you don't choose that, the other choice is to learn to accept it, to learn to accept the fact that my husband is a human being, much like I, much like everyone else, strengths, weaknesses, quirks, idiosyncrasies, the full package of a human being. And accepting that means accepting that my husband has a different operating realm, has a different emotionality, functions differently, feels differently than me, even though we're married. And even though he's supposed to feel like me, and even though he's supposed to think like me, and even though he's supposed to view the world just like me. And folks, I have to share with you, this is the single biggest cause of problems in a marriage. Forget this issue per se. I cannot tell you how much effort, energy, strength couples spend one trying to change the other. My way is the right way. My way is the way it should be done. Couples get married and they spend the rest of their lives one trying to change the other, and it never works. It never works. And again, Baruch Hashem, I'm happily married. We're married almost 30 years now. I love my wife. I think even my wife loves me. We have a, I think, beautiful marriage. And it took me 20 years to really get this. Maybe I should be ashamed to say it. But it took me 20 years because for 20 years I knew certain things were right and better. And I tried my best subtly, carefully, you know, to help my wife, you know, do things the better way, the right way. And after 20 years, I finally got it. It's not my job. It's not my role. It's not what I was put on the planet for. And it doesn't work. It never works. It never, ever, ever works. And I don't mean to belabor this point, but it's worthy to think about. I was in Chicago a little while back, and I was speaking to women about a certain Shalom Bayis issue. And after I was finished, I opened the floor to question and answers. And one woman raised her hand and says, "Rabbi, do you remember you were here 2 years ago?" I said, "I do." "Do you remember what you said to us?" I said, "Not really." She said, "You told us something that changed my marriage. You told us that if your husband hasn't changed till now, and if you yelled at him 10,000 times, yelling at him 10,001 times isn't going to change him, and he's not going to change, and you have to make a decision, either miserable or you accept him. After that year, my marriage changed dramatically." I asked, "What do you mean?" She said, "I'll tell you, it's very simple. My husband will come home Sunday night, take off his jacket, leave it on the dining room chair. Monday night, it was another suit, that jacket, another dining room chair. Tuesday night, another suit. By the time Shabbos came around, the entire dining room was filled with chairs filled with jackets. I used to fight, I used to yell, I used to scream, I used to, and it caused such disharmony." So I said to her, "Okay, so what happened?" So she said, "Well, after that chair, what I would do is Sunday night, when I saw the jacket on the chair, I took the jacket and brought it up to his closet." I said, and what happened?" "It's never been better. It's such shalom bayis, and it's so beautiful in the house." And I made those women stop and applaud. Why? Because she came to those one of those huge, huge aha moments. Your job is not to change your spouse. You weren't put on the planet to do that. It's not your role in life. But the reason why that's so difficult and it's so intuitive for us to do it and so instinctive and it takes such work is because I view the world from my vantage point, from my eyeglasses. And from the way I see the world, this is the way it should be done. Well, guess what? My spouse is a different human being. My spouse isn't me. We're married, but she and I are distinct, different people. And learning to accept that reality requires learning to understand that just because I view things this way doesn't mean my spouse does. Just because I think this is the right way doesn't mean I'm right. But more than anything, it doesn't matter. Because she has rights, I have rights, and I have no right to impose my will on another human being. If it were a different relationship, maybe. If it were an Eved and Odon, a slave and master relationship, well, then I have the right to impose my will on my servant, on my slave. But that's not marriage. No one gets married with the understanding, I am marrying my master, I am marrying my boss. It's not the relationship. That's way outside the context of a marriage. And if when you get married, your goal is to shape and mold your husband into what he should be, I got news for you. You're going to have a very, very rough time being happily married. And if you don't have such a rough time, believe me, your husband is going to have. And as a result, you're going to have it as well. Your job isn't to change your husband. But you have to understand, again, the why. The why is because he's a different human being. You're a different human being. You view things your way. He views things his way. Your job is to support each other, work together, create a bond of love, attachment of harmony. But your job is not to change one the other. And I believe this is the essence of the point. Learning to understand that I have a different set of emotionality. I look at the world through my vantage point, but my husband looks at it differently, is one of the keys to success for any marriage. And again, I believe it surfaces particularly in this issue because it is so difficult for women to relate to this issue because they don't have this problem. I would never do that. I would never do it to him. Why did he do it to me? The answer is, I believe you're right. You would never do it. But he didn't do it to you. He's built differently, created differently. And learning to accept that, learning to recognize that, doesn't mean you're saying it's okay. Doesn't mean you're condoning the behavior. Doesn't mean, oh, that's great. Yeah, my husband does this. Yeah, it's great. No way. And by the way, if your husband says to you, well, madam, listen, I'll agree to continue being married, but these are my, I'm going to do this and this and this. And if it includes things like watching pornography, that is a very good cause for you to say, this marriage is not what I agreed to. And if that's your husband's attitude, then it requires a very careful scrutiny. It's certainly something you bring to a rav, something wiser. Because if your husband's attitude is, I watch pornography, it's none of your business, and tough luck, lady, that's a very different world. But that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a person who deeply regrets what he's involved in, wishes it wasn't ever there, and wishes he never, ever, ever had any such exposure, and is grappling with a major, major life test. And learning to accept that, and learning to emotionally get comfortable with that, to really embrace it, requires viewing the world not from your vantage point, but from his vantage point. And again, it's a tremendous, tremendous avoda, and it's not easy at all. But again, it has nothing to do with you. And I really want to make one more point before I finish. What if the following? What if a woman comes home and she finds on Shabbos her husband smoking a cigarette? And I'll make it better. She comes home and she finds her husband getting high on marijuana, smoking on Shabbos. Ah, chutzpah! How can you do that? That's horrible! It's terrible! Okay, good. I agree. And it's obviously an Issa D'Raisa. First of all, Shabbos. Second of all, Shmartim Misnaf Shaseichem. A lot of issues involved. I get it. Here's the question. Would she ever say the words, he betrayed me? He betrayed me. How could he do that to me? How could he do that to our marriage? I don't think she would say that. She might say a lot of things, like, how could he do it, a louse, a jerk, what's he... But it wasn't done to her. Why? Because that's clearly a sin between him and God. It's something he's not allowed to do, something he's forbidden, and it's obviously wrong, but it's between him and his creator. And if the marijuana part confuses you a little bit, let's stick to straight cigarettes. If he smokes a cigarette on Shabbos, that's between him and God. It has nothing to do with your marriage. Now, again, you may decide that that's not the kind of guy you want to be married to. And if, in fact, he says, well, I'm smoking on Shabbos, I don't care, you may opt out. But it didn't violate your relationship and didn't violate your marriage. You may not want it. You may not be able to respect him because if he's that kind of person, but it wasn't something he did to you wasn't a violation of your marriage, wasn't something that he stabbed you in the heart with. And the point is that that's exactly what pornography is. Pornography is not a sin between him and you. Now, again, if he says, I don't care, and I'm continuing to do it, that's a different ballpark. Or if a guy had an affair, physically had an affair, again, it's a different issue. But that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a guy who's fighting a fight, battling a battle that has nothing to do with choosing another woman over you, has nothing to do with you at all. Has to do with desire, strict appetite, taiva, and it's between him and his creator. And again, it's not our job to judge someone else's nisayon. But more than anything, I'm trying to convey the understanding that it really isn't anything to do with you. And again, this is something that takes an awfully long time to dwell on, to think about, because to incorporate it into your emotionality is the real problem. And I guarantee, let's even say you listen to this and you hear it and you say, I get it, I understand. The next morning, there's going to be a voice in your head, but how could he do it to me? He stabbed me in the heart. How could he do it to me? And you're going to find yourself in one of those great life tests. That great life test is, are you able to control your thinking? You see, people don't realize this, but probably the biggest part of all of our avodas Hashem is controlling our thoughts. Rebbe Ezra on Los Sachmod explains, Iker kol ha-mitzvahs, the main focal point of all the mitzvahs, is le-yasher leva adam, to straighten out man's heart. Meaning to say, as your husband's job is to train himself not to look, you'll excuse me for saying it, your battle is to train yourself not to condemn, not to judge. And certainly not to judge him based on your standards. And it's a bitter battle. Because the minute you hear this, there's going to be a voice inside that, yeah, but look what he did to me. How did he did it to me. And what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to squelch those voices, put them down, and focus on the reality. The reality is your husband is a good guy. A good guy who messed up. A good guy who loves you. A good guy who wants a successful, happy marriage. And he is as miserable, probably more miserable with that reality, what he was involved in, than you are. And it had nothing to do with your marriage, with the bond of love, with the attraction. But incorporating that into your thinking is a huge, huge avoda. It takes a tremendous amount of work. And that's one of the nisyonos of life. As your husband has his battle, you have yours. Hashem created us, put us on this planet to grow, to accomplish. And Hashem wants us to be hugely happy. Hashem created couples and wants them to be creating beautiful, love-filled marriages. And there's a lot of work that has to go into that. As a human being, oftentimes has to do a lot of work to learn to be happy, to learn to be satisfied. A couple has a lot of work to do to learn to be happily married. Everyone, when they're 13, has this fairy book vision of marriage. I'll meet her, she'll meet me, we'll look in each other's eyes, and it'll be love at first sight, and everything will be fine and dandy forever and ever. We'll be deeply, madly in love. And then you get married. And then you make that key, critical discovery. Marriage doesn't just happen. I mean, marriage just happens, but a bond of love, a successful marriage, doesn't just happen. A successful marriage is a conscious choice. A conscious choice that I will work on this marriage. I will work on that connection. I'll work on that bond of love. I'll stop doing the things that bother my spouse. And I'll learn to be less whatever my issues are that bother. And I'm going to spend as much effort and energy as it takes to create the connection, to spend the time, and to build that beautiful bond of love and attachment. But it is a tremendous avoda. It's a tremendous amount of work. In Hollywood, you fall in love and you get married. You fall out of love and you get unmarried. That's the reality of the Western culture. What can I tell you? But in the real world, people who understand marriages understand that a marriage requires a tremendous amount of work. Some of the work is rather easy. You spend time together. You enjoy each other's company. You make sure that you're romantic and involved. Some of the work is a lot more difficult. Learning not to say those things that bother my spouse. learning to do the things that my spouse consider very important, even though I know they're not necessary, and not judging my spouse by my system of judgment. Learning to accept my spouse as another human being, different vantage point, different emotionality, as valid as mine, and it's not my job to change my spouse, not my job to teach my spouse what's right, what's wrong. We're supposed to live together in harmony and peace and be supportive of one another. And again, Hashem helps when you do the work, when you put the effort in, you succeed. And as an aside, more than anything, if you want a successful marriage, you have to daven. You have to daven, daven, daven. And the more I've been involved in marriages, the more I found this reality. Again, Baruch Hashem, my wife and I, or at least I'm happily married. I think my wife is also. And I'd like to also share with you that 3 times a day I daven for Shalom Bayis. 3 times a day I make a personal bakasha in Shmona Esrei for Shalom Bayis. Why? Because I see how difficult it is to be successfully married. How much work it takes, how much siyata d'shmaya. Again, you do your part, you put in the work, and Hashem helps. But davening is a very, very wise thing to do. Ask your Creator for help. Hashem, I want to create a peaceful, beautiful home. I want to love my husband. I want him to love me. I want to have a bond, a connection. I want to find out what it is that I do that bothers him. And I want to stop doing it. And I want him to do the same. And I want to have a beautiful marriage. Hashem, please help. And when you do the difficult work and you ask, Hashem helps, and you get to a different place. But again, it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of time. And I'd like to close with one last observation. A while back, a young man in his early 30s came to me with a problem. He said, Rabbi, I have such a problem. Let's go. Let's talk. What's going on? And he explained to me that his wife had put on some weight. She had 3 children. They had 3 children. And with each baby, she put on some weight. And she was overweight. She wasn't what anyone would call obese. And probably most of us wouldn't even say she was fat. But she definitely was not the same. She didn't have the same figure that they had when they first got married. And he explained that he was a physician. He worked in a hospital. And he's always amongst these young, pretty nurses who are thin like rods. And it bothers him. Why won't his wife just lose weight? And he explained he offered all kinds of things, all kinds of diets, a personal coach, working out, whatever she needs. And she just won't do it. Why won't she do it? And it bothers me. And I can't look at her. And she's ugly to me. And I just can't be happily married with her. Why won't she just lose the weight? And after listening to him long enough and listening to him going on and seeing how unhappy he was, I said to him one point. I said to him, you have a choice to make. You either accept your wife as she is or you suffer. Because guess what? Unlikely that she's going to change. Do you know why she's that size again? She's not obese. She's not usually, but she's larger than when you first got married. Because it's different when you're in your mid-30s than when you're a teenager. She has 3 kids, can't earn, there's a lot going on, and a lot of things, and she would love to be thinner, but she isn't. And you have a single choice to make. You either learn to accept your wife as she is, or you suffer. And the suffering that you're going to suffer is misery. Because all you need for a marriage to disintegrate is for one partner not to be satisfied with the, I can't accept it. She's ugly to me, and I just can't wrap my, you're toast. You're done. If you don't get divorced, you're going to fight, scream, and live in Gehenna for the rest of your life. But how can I accept it? She's just not attractive to me. And this is what's required. A man can train himself to find his wife attractive. If she's obese, I get it. But that's not what we're dealing with. But it's an acceptance. More than anything, learning to just, okay, I accept it. She's different, a different temperament, a different personality. And I'm going to train myself to find her attractive. I'm going to train myself to fall in love with her as she is and stay there. And if that sounds difficult, you are right. Are there systems? Yeah, there sure are. Quite a number of shmuzim deal with how to work on that and how to do it. You listen to Shmooz number 45. You listen to parts of the marriage seminar, even parts of the fight. But that's a big part of a successful marriage. But as this man, to be happily married, needs to accept his wife as she is, I'm afraid to tell you that that's exactly the situation you find yourself in. You wish it weren't so, and he wishes it weren't so. But if you don't come to grips with this, if you don't learn to accept it as whatever, it's something I wish it didn't happen, but it's just part of regular life. If you don't accept that, you will be miserable. If you remain in this emotional state of, I can't accept, I can't tolerate, I certainly can't get into bed with such a man, forget it, you're going to suffer the consequences. The consequences are an unhappy, unsuccessful marriage. But Rabbi, that's not fair. It's his problem. It's his problem. Why do I have to do all the work for his problem? He should have to correct all the problem. And that attitude is the most disastrous attitude to a marriage. It's not his problem, nor your problem. It's both of you guys. You're a unit working together, a unit dealing with life's issues, a unit dealing with each other's strengths and weaknesses, a unit accepting one the other. And the more you can embrace that concept, and the more you could accept that concept, the more shalom bayis, the more love, the more peace, harmony, and happiness you'll have in your marriage. And the more you focus on me, it's not fair, why do I have to, the more misery you will suffer. It is an avoda, and I'm not here to tell you it's easy, but I believe that Hashem helps. I believe there are systems and there are ways. May Hashem grant you much success. May you have much shalom bayis, happiness. May Hashem grant you tremendous, tremendous siyata d'shmaya.